This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of July 21st, 2019. Welcome. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, the Is It Just Me commentary. Headlines from the Pacific Rim and Pacific Northwest. The Big Deal feature, sounds of the gas and diesel fuel price inquiry, the British Columbia Utilities Commissioner testimony on why Metro Vancouver's gas prices are so high, and I'll award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or will there be no change to leadership in Ottawa this fall and Washington, D.C. next fall? Donald Trump's latest Twitter bozo eruption targeted four female rookies on Capitol Hill, and the president was slammed for being a racist yet again. He followed it up by another one of his campaign rallies. Meanwhile, back in Washington, D.C., another motion to impeach him failed. But there is method to his madness. Trump succeeded on two counts. First, to show how divided the Democrats are. While they do agree on their opposition to him, they do not agree on whether to impeach him. Second, it knocked the migrant crisis on the southern border off the front page. Meanwhile, in Canada, Justin Trudeau stepped up his campaign against Donald Trump and Doug Ford, the two politicians that he prefers to talk about, in an ongoing scare campaign to tar conservatives with a broad brush. It's the typical liberal playbook. Campaign from the left. They want four more years so they can govern from the right. And it might just work again if Andrew Scheer and Jagmeet Singh can't regain momentum. Team Trudeau is full of backroom strategists and kids in short pants who have experience helping people like Christy Clark and the BC Liberals win in 2013 and Gregor Robertson and Vision Vancouver win in 2014. It's about positioning their candidate and their party as the least worst option, even after so many scandals and so many broken promises. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. Linda Liu reports in the South China Morning Post. Chai Ing-wen says friends from Hong Kong will be considered for asylum on humanitarian grounds. Taiwanese president makes first acknowledgement of reports that Hong Kong protesters are fleeing to the island. The Act governing relations with Hong Kong and Macau allows Taiwan to assist where safety and liberty are threatened for political reasons, but it is not a party to the United Nations Refugee Convention. Protests and violent clashes have been ongoing in Hong Kong since early June. The Hong Kong government has said the extradition bill, which would allow the transfer of criminal suspects to jurisdictions the city does not have an extradition deal with, including mainland China, is dead. But protesters have demanded its formal withdrawal and an independent investigation into the use of force by Hong Kong police. On July 18th, the European Parliament voted to adopt a resolution calling for the formal withdrawal of the bill. Beijing said the motion represented ignorance and prejudice. Kyoto and Gigi report in the Japan Times. Most victims of Kyoto animation fire tried to escape via stairs leading to the roof, but couldn't open the door. 19 of the 33 people who died were found collapsed on the stairs connecting the third floor to the rooftop, and the door was closed when firefighters arrived. A 41-year-old man who was admitted to starting the fire was being treated at a hospital for burns to his face, chest, and other body parts. Police identified him as Shinji Aoba. Katri Weebu of ABC News Australia reports, Indigenous artist from Northern Territory wins Australia's richest landscape prize worth $100,000. Carbian McDonald Changala's work, called Four Dreamings, was selected as the winner of the Hadley's Art Prize from more than 600 other paintings. He held a paintbrush for the first time only a year ago. It took McDonald Changala 2 days to travel from the remote community of Pupunya in the Northern Territory to Tasmania. He took his first ever flight during the journey. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. Daniel Beekman reports in the Seattle Times, interest groups are pouring money into Seattle's city council elections using no-limit PACs. Businesses, unions, and other interest groups have started pouring money into Seattle city council races ahead of the August 6th primary election using political action committees that can collect and spend unlimited amounts. The Seattle Metropolitan Chamber of Commerce's committee had reported spending more than $300,000 in the council races, while a committee run by the Hotel Workers Union Unite Here had reported spending nearly $150,000 on a single candidate. The Chamber Committee has raised nearly $1 million, and its top contributors include Amazon at $250,000, Vulcan at $155,000, the Washington Association of Realtors at $50,000, and Expedia at $50,000. Andrew Thien in the Oregonian reports, high-speed trains between Vancouver, Seattle, and Portland would be cost-effective, transformative, sustainable. Projections put the construction costs anywhere from $24 billion U.S. to $42 billion U.S., with rail service beginning by 2035. The states and Canadian province would likely pursue federal, regional, and local funds to pay for the project. They plan to create a steering committee to study next steps, including further route options and how to pay for the massive project. Planners estimate a rail line could move passengers between Portland and Seattle in less than an hour, which also is the estimated travel time between Seattle and Vancouver. Trains would hit top speeds of roughly 250 miles per hour at various points. The exact route is unclear, but it may include stops in Bellingham, Everett, Olympia, or other cities. And last week in the Breaker.News, these headlines. Chair of taxpayer-owned Coalport cagey on details of junket to elite California university. Horgan flew charter to Kelowna almost 2 years after Air Christie was grounded. Feds probe alleged breach of CN agreement that allowed BC Rail privatization. Go to thebreaker.news and read the stories behind these headlines. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.news podcast. The inquiry into gasoline and diesel prices in British Columbia held what it called an oral workshop in downtown Vancouver last week. The 3 days of testimony before the British Columbia Utilities Commission heard from various witnesses, including executives of oil companies and academics. BC Premier John Horgan ordered the inquiry in May as high gas prices in Vancouver made North American headlines. Horgan has faced criticism because the fast-track inquiry will not consider the role of taxes on gas prices. The commission is looking into what has influenced prices at the pumps since 2015, including refining and retail margins, price fluctuations, competition, and what other jurisdictions are doing to enhance transparency of gas pricing. The industry has denied collusion, but critics say there is an overall lack of competition in BC. One of the executives the commission heard was Krista Friesen. Krista Friesen is the vice president of downstream business and operations for Husky Energy, and she explained how her company sets prices and what costs it faces. Husky is a Calgary-based public company controlled by Hong Kong tycoon Li Ka-shing. It has a 12,000-barrel-a-day refinery in Prince George and 500 service stations from BC to New Brunswick.
As stated in our survey responses, Husky has both owned and leased corporate retail stations, as well as independent dealers operating Husky-branded retail stations. Husky does not have any power or influence over the pricing offered by the independent dealers. At its corporate stations, gasoline retail pricing at each station is determined by Husky, not by the retail operator. Pricing decisions are generally made by a Husky district manager in the region in consultation with an operations manager and a senior operations manager at Husky headquarters in Calgary. Generally, pricing is based on overall market conditions, particularly movement in the prevailing publicly posted local rack price and information conveyed to the district manager on local market conditions and posted street prices by operators or retailers. Husky headquarters may also direct the district manager to either increase or reduce prices in an attempt to either increase profits per liter or volume of gasoline sold, respectively. To address the panel's questions regarding retail cost drivers, BC has had a number of cost increases that were not replicated in other provinces, for example, real estate and minimum wage. In terms of real estate costs, The average rent for leased sites in BC has increased by 12% since 2014, and the total rent across Canada has increased by only 5% since 2014. BC's increase is higher than we have experienced in any other province. For minimum wage, our data shows a 35% increase in BC minimum wage over a five-year span from 2014 through today. Alberta is similar in terms of minimum wage increase in 2015 to 2019, but looking only at the last 3 years and the announced increases in 2020 and 2021, BC takes the lead as the most impacted province for minimum wage increases. As explained above, it is the rack price and prevailing market conditions, such as competing street prices, that directly translate into the retail fuel price, not the underlying costs. The cost increases listed by Suncor can cause cost pressure against margin on the retail price. This means that more margin is required to stay profitable and achieve an acceptable return on investment. An increase in cost to the retailer, such as minimum wage increases, does not mean that customers' cost per liter will immediately change.
Also appearing before the inquiry, economists Robin Allen and Mark Eliason, who were both BC Crown Corporation executives in the 1990s. Robin Allen and Mark Eliason appeared as interveners at the BCUC hearings to discuss their research into a lack of competition in the BC fuel wholesale and retail industry. Robin Allen.
This graph from Suncor Annual Reports shows the increase in operating profits at Suncor's refineries over the period 2014 to quarter one 2019. The increase in profit has been, operating profit has been significant. On April 30th, 2015, Suncor President and CEO Steve Williams informed investors that the company's search for, quote, operational excellence for perfection, end of quote, was resulting in an overachievement of the $800 million in cost reduction initiatives scheduled for that year. At the time, the expectation was that 1,200 workers would be fired, but Suncor eventually reduced its workforce by 1,700 people, which was the primary driver for the company achieving sustainable savings of almost $1 billion a year. In July 2015, investors were informed that cost reduction efforts continued with benefits from natural gas price reductions, as distinct from natural gas being a cost pressure, and further that, quote, we are still continuing to see overall deflation in costs, particularly around labor and commodities. The second quarter of 2014 to 2015, you see an 18% reduction in costs, end of quote. It is disingenuous when a company lays off 1,700 workers and realizes hundreds of millions of dollars in cost savings through its operations, including its refineries, and then tries to blame a minor increase in the minimum wage for contributing to excessive retail margins. In answer to the Commission's survey question 21, quote, are there gasoline and diesel retail cost drivers which have substantially changed in the last 3 to 5 years, end of quote, Suncor says yes. The key cost drivers which have substantially changed in the last 3 to 5 years are a 30% increase in overall petroleum costs, a 30% increase in maintenance costs, a 20% increase in rental expenses, and a 21% increase in the BC minimum wage. These cost increases over 5 years should be compared to the one-year reduction in all costs of 18% for 2015. Without going into details, it is useful to note that Suncor has continued its cost-cutting initiatives. The increase in the BC minimum wage is a fundamentally false narrative. Most of the sales of refined product at retail outlets are conducted without any support from minimum wage employees. We've heard that 75% of the outlets do not have full service. These employees do not pump gasoline, and consumers can complete the entire sale at the pump without engaging with an employee.
Mark Eliason.
The absence of a balanced representation of the cost driving refinery and retail margins is symptomatic of a more general malaise that has led to a failure of the refined product market in British Columbia. That is, suppliers are not transparent or accountable. And on the rare occasion when they provide information, they appear to do so in a biased and self-serving manner. Our research shows that the operating cost relief that suppliers have achieved in recent years have not been passed through the supply chain to end users, but have been retained by companies for the benefit of their operations and their shareholders. Cost reduction evidence shows that refinery and retail margins should not have widened since 2015. If the market was competitive, they should have narrowed. Unfair pricing practices are taking place by all suppliers, and this is possible because of a lack of competition in the market. High prices have negative implications for BC consumers and businesses because they disproportionately increase spending on refined products, reducing spending on other products and services, and they disproportionately harm the BC economy. Excess profits from refined product pricing that would not occur in a workably competitive market flow away from consumers and businesses who live and work in the BC economy to the bottom lines of oil companies, refiners, and retailers. This is not economically efficient, and neither is it fair. A lack of competition that allows suppliers to exert power over price leads to market failure and significant costs to consumers, businesses, and the BC economy. In our opinion, the solution is government action through the BC Utilities Commission. Thank you very much.
I do have a couple of questions. Over the last couple of days, there's been much discussion over what's become quite a popular chart that Deakin brought forward. I have a reference to it, chart 4.2.1 in their first report. And we've been told that this is basic economic theory. It's economics 101 of how prices are established. And I'm interested in your opinion. Would you agree with that?
The graph that I'm familiar with is a perfectly competitive market where there are supposed to be independent sellers, numerous, mm-hmm. with complete ease of entry and exit from the market. Mm-hmm. That does not describe what's happening in British Columbia. That is not the BC market.
Those were highlights from the BC Utilities Commission inquiry into gas and diesel pricing in British Columbia. Interveners have until August 8th to make final submissions. The Commission's final report is due August 30th.
I, Justin P.J. Trudeau.
No!
Sunny ways, my friends. Sunny ways.
As a great sports fan, I would like to offer you my belated congratulations on the occasion of the historic triumph of Toronto Raptors over the American Golden State Warriors. I wonder if Montreal is the best place to praise Toronto. Congratulations on the occasion of the historic triumph of Toronto Raptors.
I, Justin P.J. Trudeau. Sunny ways, my friends. Sunny ways.
The virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to a deserving person or organization that has made a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to Sean Bergman, the human friend of Vancouver's Canuck the Crow. Last week, Canuck became the first crow in Canada or the U.S. to be banded for non-endangered and non-research purposes. Bergman has helped the eccentric crow become a celebrity, which has put the plight of winged creatures in the headlines at a crucial time in this growing city. You can nominate someone or something for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of July 21st, 2019. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on July 21st in 1969, at 2:56 Universal Time, Neil Armstrong's historic walk on the moon? Armstrong said that it was one small step for a man, but that part was inaudible.
It's one small step for man.
one giant leap for mankind.
Oh, that looks beautiful to me, Neil.
It has a stark beauty all its own. It's like much of the high desert of the United States. It's different, but it's very pretty out here.
And it was the 1960s. It was a time of turmoil. Not everyone was excited. The moonwalk inspired Gil Scott Heron's Whitey on the Moon.
I can't pay no doctor bills, but Whitey's on the moon. 10 years from now, I'll be paying still while Whitey's on the moon.
Now you know. Send your feedback, send your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.